I'm not going to do a proper long preach this evening, but just share a few thoughts from 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 19 to 27. And this is Paul talking about his ministry. He says, though I'm free and I belong to no man, he says, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, although I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, although I am not free from God's law myself, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I've become all things to all men so that by all possible means I may save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one gets a prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. So I don't run like a man running aimlessly. I don't fight like a man beating the air. Instead, I beat my body and I make it my slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself may not be disqualified for the prize. Well, congratulations, first of all, to those who ran the race this morning. I think you all finished it. I think you probably all finished it still running, which is a major achievement. I stand before you in all due humility as someone who wimped out of this year's. But you did hear Leslie say just a few minutes ago that if I run next year, then he will as well. And you're much better shaped for this sort of thing than I am. So if I do, I expect you to. That's not a promise, but it's just an if. I think special congratulations, actually, to those who've turned out again tonight, because it's the limbs are aching, I'm sure. We learned a little bit this morning, didn't we? We learned that we've got some pretty good runners here at Woody. We learned that we've got a... I know this because I was standing next to her. We've got a world-class cheerleader in Tanya Hardesty. She was absolutely amazing. We learned that 10K isn't really long enough for Philippe to get into his stride, that he might need a much longer race, really, to do it properly. I am a little bit disappointed that none of you guys got into the top three. But you're in the race. And with the exception of Philippe, I suspect it's true that every one of you pushed yourselves to the limits. This idea of stretching yourself comes out in very much in what Paul says here. I think it comes out in three main ways. First of all, it comes out in terms of training. Verse 25 to 27, he says, everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that won't last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I don't run like a man running aimlessly. I don't fight like a man beating the air. I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I've preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. I've been impressed by the training programs that some of the guys have gone into. Getting up early in the morning to run, turning out in the evening after a full day at work, pounding the streets again, day after day pushing yourselves to the limit and seeing that limit extending as you do so. Moving, as Stu was suggesting at the a couple of months ago, from being able to run 100 metres to being able to run 100 times that. The obvious comparison is between the disciplines that a runner will embrace in order to finish 10K and get a little blue ribbon round your neck, and the spiritual disciplines that we're prepared to go for as Christians. I remember reading about 30 years ago, just under 30 years ago, a book called Celebration of Discipline by Richard Foster. And it looks at the spiritual disciplines of prayer and fasting and meditation and scripture reading and worship and giving and about three or four others that I can't remember. I have to say that it's one of the books that has impacted me more than almost any other that I've read. It significantly enriched my walk with God. Almost 30 years on, however, I have to say in all honesty that I've forgotten most of it. Not only have I forgotten it in my mind, but I'm actually not doing a lot of the things that I learned from that book. And the whole idea of spiritual discipline is somewhere a little bit more on the back burner. So there's a real challenge here. There's a real challenge for me, certainly, and maybe there is for you as well. And it is a real challenge because Paul in 1 Timothy in chapter 4 says, he says, rather train yourselves to be godly. For physical training is of some value. All this sort of pounding the streets, getting your body into shape, getting the pounds off, getting the muscles firmed up, all of that has some real value. You look better, you feel better. Yeah, it has value. But godliness has value for all things because it holds promise both for the present life and for the life to come. It's something that changes us here and now. It's something that will pay dividends throughout eternity. And the question that we have to face is, I think, what priority am I giving to growing in God in my day-to-day life? What time in each day am I setting aside for him? And do I make it a kind of option if nothing else comes along or as an alternative? Is it one of those things that's negotiable? Or do I actually set my time with God, the disciplines of walking with God, do I set them as a priority and make sure that other things fit around it? How serious are we about getting into shape as men and women of God? So that's the first thing that I want to raise tonight. Second thing that this has to say to us, I think, is about focus. Stretching ourselves in terms of focus. Verse 24 says, do you not know that in a race all the runners run? Only one gets the prize. So run in such a way as to get the prize. That, I think, is about setting ourselves ambitions. For some of you guys this morning, your realistic ambition was to reach the finish line. I watched one old geezer who was about 10 years older than me, I'm guessing, had a really quite a large paunch. So everything was against him. And you look at a guy like that and you think, actually reaching the finishing line is a major, major victory. He will have something to be really proud of when he makes it. A lot of you, I guess, probably had a particular time that you were aiming for. You were fairly confident that you'd get there, but you had a time that you wanted to aim for. It might not have been anywhere near the elite runners, but you had your own personal challenge. I understand that Gerwin was aiming for 1 hour 50 and...
Managed 1 hour 49.
1 hour 6, which was very good for it. Yeah. For a few people, the ambition, I guess, would have been to be in the top 3 or even to win. But when we run a race, we've got to have ambition. We've got to have focus. We've got to be aiming for something. And from that ambition, from that sense of focus, will come a determination and a passion. You've got your goal and you sort of get it in your mind and you say, I'm not going to be beaten by this. I'm going to achieve it. Out of it comes a passion. Also, I think, comes out of that a faith to press on with a belief that you can do it, that it is possible. One of the things that I found really inspirational about the Paralympics was seeing folks who could have given up. Actually, when you looked at some of the things that had happened to them, they could have given up. They could have retreated into passive despair, just sitting in front of a television screen for the rest of their lives and done nothing. But instead they focused not on what they couldn't do, but on what they could do. Not on what they hadn't got, but on what they had gotten. Some of them achieved amazing things. Ambition and focus are powerful things. And so it's worth asking ourselves, what are my ambitions as one of the people of Christ? What are our ambitions together as a church, as the people of Christ? Well, I hope some of our ambitions would be that we would love to see people coming to Christ. That's one of the things that I would love to see in this place a whole stream of people, one after another, coming to life-changing faith in Jesus. We want to grow a church. We want to see people set free, people who've been stuck for ages set free. We want to see our children growing up into men and women of God. Love to look back. I shan't be here in 15, 20 years' time, but some of you will. And look back and think of the scallywags in Sunday school and know that they're going on with God and they're real spiritually grounded, powerful people. We would love to see, wouldn't we, a community impacted by the love and the power of Jesus as it's demonstrated and lived out in his church. I suspect the first thing we will need to do if we want to see those ambitions realized is to pray. I was reading Tearfund's prayer diary, the most recent that they sent through. I don't know how many of you get that. But on the back of it, there's in large print a quote from the 19th century American evangelist D.L. Moody. And it simply says this: behind and each great movement of God can be traced to a kneeling figure. Each great movement of God can be traced to a kneeling figure. So that's the second thing, focus. And the third thing is companionship. Making it work for one another by getting alongside each other. And that might seem less obvious in the context of running a race, but it's actually what most of our reading is about. Maybe it's not easy to illustrate from running, but I think it is from cycling. I've never followed the Tour de France, but my oldest son was staying with us with his family, as you know, a couple of months ago, and it was while the Tour de France was on. And the big headline news in that was we had to watch it every night. We had to get back in time to watch it, didn't we? Big headline news was Bradley Wiggins, otherwise known as Wiggo, who got the yellow jersey as the first Brit who'd ever won the Tour de France. But it's a team sport. Might not be obvious to you, and it wasn't obvious to me for sure, but apparently it is, because you need guys to work with you riding just in front of you so that you can zip along in their slipstream with a little bit less effort. If you've got that, then you have a chance of winning. If you haven't got that, you aren't in there with a prayer, not at the top level. So Wiggo won the Tour de France because he had guys who chose to get alongside him and ride with him. It's something of that sort of sense, I guess, that Paul has in mind here. And you'd expect him to apply that principle to Christians supporting and encouraging each other. But he doesn't. He's actually talking about people who are not yet Christians. He says, look, with the Jews, I become a Jew. I'm not really a Jew. I'm not under the law. I'm not, but I actually stand alongside them where they are. With the Gentiles, people without the law, I stand with them as somebody who isn't under law. In point of fact, I am an accountable person. I'm under the authority of Christ, but I stand with them. I identify with them. And that's what Paul did. Getting alongside Jews, he preached in synagogues. He went to synagogues. He spoke in synagogues. He quoted the Old Testament to them because it was their book. At times, he was prepared to live under their traditions. In Acts chapter 21, it talks about when Paul went to Jerusalem and he took on some vow or other about shaving his head and doing whatever it was. Not part of his mental furniture at all, not something that he would normally do, but something that he was prepared to do in order to build bridges to the Jewish people around him. Also, when he was trying to reach non-Jews, the same principle but different behavior. He met them where they were. He met them in the marketplace. He met the intellectuals in Athens in the debating hall in Athens on the Areopagus. Wherever they were, he went and stood alongside them. To the educated Greek elite, he even quoted Greek philosophers and poets. Wherever they were, whoever they were, He go alongside. And I believe that it remains true, you see, that we won't reach people for Christ without getting alongside them. And indeed, that is a large part of the vision behind this love running thing from a Woody point of view. It is actually the drive behind our thinking about the church at this stage in our life, learning from churches like Cornerstone in Swansea and Woodlands in Bristol, looking to make space for us all to get alongside non-Christians. One of the ways we're looking to do that is for home groups to sort of make space in the program to mostly to meet once a couple of weeks or whatever, but certainly to have at least one week in each month, a sort of Connect Wednesday, if you like, when very deliberately, very intentionally, either together or separately, we're giving time to non-Christians. We want to see if we can go further than that and build groups around a shared interest or area of mission that will put us alongside non-Christians. And some of the ideas that have, just to give you a sort of instance of that, some of the ideas that have come out so far are a sort of love running, which would perhaps include doing an alpha group with some of the non-Christian guys, maybe morphing into a wider sort of sports group. A family issues group, perhaps, which would include people who want to run a marriage course or a parenting course or a boundaries course or a number of different courses, but all with the same heart of reaching and helping and getting alongside people in families. A swimmers group has been mentioned. A food bank group, a geeks group, a book club, a blocks for blokes or a sort of pub group based around men on the fringe of faith where you can sit around and they can sort of talk about some of the stuff that holds them back from real commitment. A deaf-related group, a mum's group, a group with a ministry to the homeless, a choir, a gardening group. Of course, the reality is that a great majority of those are not going to happen anytime soon. But what about if two or three of them do? What about if two or three of them do? If we're able to build friendships with non-Christians that we've got things in common with, as a group, if we're able to share Christ with them, if we're able to include some of our non-Christian friends in the groups of Christians that are in significant ways like them, what if we're able to reach out to them and give them pathways to reach back to us and connect with the community of Christ people? Do you know, there are the two sides to this, aren't there? We've got to get out there and get amongst non-Christians, but if they get interested in faith, where do they go? Do we bring them to a Sunday morning with, I don't know, it's not quite their level, is it? The preaching isn't their level. The worship probably isn't their level. If we bring them to a house group, you know, if I bring one of my classical music people to a house group, there's nobody else in that house group who's even less than... sorry, Maddie. I was going to say anyone less than tone deaf, but you see the point that I'm making. We often don't have a... Oh, Kerry, yeah. Yes. Ministry of encouragement. Ministering. Strike that off the record. Get it out of the tape. Yeah, absolutely. But to have, do you see what I'm saying? That to have a group of people that when our non-Christian friends meet them, they can think, they're folks like me. I can relate to them. I can see where and actually, for them to have a bridge, if you like, into the community of God's people. Fantastic. It's actually what God's doing in a number of places in our nation. In a variety of different ways, in a variety of different formats and stuff like that, but it suggests that there could be a real powerful move of God in our communities if we find ways of doing that. One thing I think we can and must do as leaders at Woody is to facilitate the reshaping, not just of our individual priorities, but of the church itself to reach the lost. That's the heart behind some of the ways that we're looking to move forward at this particular juncture. There's stuff that we can't do, but that we can do. And I believe that God's calling is to reshape so that we're actually mission-shaped rather than sort of all looking inwards in a circle. I guess, however, what comes out of Paul's words in 1 Corinthians 9 is above all about his own heart and his own drive. It's personal vision. It seems that reaching people for Christ was something that utterly captured him. Some of his language here that we didn't read is extraordinary. He says about preaching the gospel, I'd rather die than have anyone deprive me of this boast of offering the gospel for free. When I preach the gospel, I can't boast, for I'm compelled to preach. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. If I did it voluntarily, then I've got a reward. If not voluntarily, I'm simply discharging the trust committed to me. I can't stop doing it. That's a fantastic heart to stand behind this. This is something that utterly captured him. We need that. Changing outward stuff won't do it, of course. We need that heart. We need that sort of passion. Only God can bring it. As leaders of Woody, hopefully we can lead the charge. Hopefully we can be in the front line and be giving an example. Hopefully we will share the vision. We'll be there right in the heart and the thick of it. But we can't actually force or manipulate God changing our hearts and our minds. We need God to touch and to capture our hearts for the lost. And I suppose above all, that's what I wanted to take out of this passage. It's an interesting time at the moment because it seems nationally that everybody's calling us to prayer. I don't know if you've noticed that. There's something on London at the end of the month, a sort of call the whole nation to prayer. UK, I think, not England. The Baptist Union are calling us to prayer this Sunday, as a matter of fact, to do with the sort of shaping of stuff in the Baptist denomination. We've not been able to do much with that. Hope UK is calling us to prayer for God's transformation of our communities. I think it'd be good for us to pray tonight. Maybe just take 10 or 15 minutes to pray into some of the stuff that God's calling us into. Pray for the follow-up of this morning. The idea of the thing was not just keep fit. The idea of it was getting alongside. So we got the celebration service on Sunday. It would be brilliant if God can use that to touch people's hearts and lives. And also the ongoing connections and friendships between folks who've been part of Team Woody. Which included folks who aren't actually Woody people. Then I think as a leadership, we would value your prayers over the leading the change and the reshaping of stuff here. And the whole way that as a church, we will discern God's will in that and go for it. I guess, too, that we would pray for our own heart for those without Christ and that God would use us to reach them. So I think what I'd like to suggest is, if this is okay with you, that we just huddle pretty much where we are in groups of half a dozen or so. And just as the Lord leads us, pray into some of that stuff.